Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
Welcome in, everybody. A very busy day for Boston sports. We've got the final preseason game between the Patriots and the Giants. It's a big New York weekend, really, because we have the Sox going to the Bronx Bombers. They're going to be seeing the Yankees. And we're going to talk to Chris Cotillo of Mass Live about the Red Sox and two AL East teams that are heading in maybe some different directions, unless the Red Sox have a great series in this four-game trip that they're taking to New York. We're going to talk to him about what to expect from the Red Sox and what happened with that Orioles series, what happened with the Marlins. But we're starting there. That's Elliot Wolf, Executive Vice President of Player Personnel for the Patriots, talking to Phil Perry on Monday before practice, saying, yeah, we'd be willing to give up a second-round pick. We've been willing to give up even a first-round pick if the trade is right. And this is where I want to start, John Lyons. This is Megan Ottolini with John Lyons filling in for Jones and Keefe today. The boys are on vacation. I want to start here. Simple as this. Do you believe Elliot Wolf? Do you believe him? And yes, I say the name in a funny way. I understand. Do you believe him when he says, we're willing to part with that much draft capital if it's the right kind of guy for this team?
So I definitely believe him, Mego, on the second round pick. I don't know if they'd really part with a first round pick. And I think a lot of it comes down to how good do they actually think they're going to be? Because if you think you're going to be a 7 or 8 win team, that's a first round pick that could be 14th overall or 15th overall. If you think you're going to win 9 or 10 games, like let's say they feel that way, well, then maybe that pick is 21st, 22nd. It's a little bit different, and they'll be more willing to. So I do think, without a doubt, they'd be willing to give up a second-round pick. I don't know about a first-round pick. We have seen them, and I know they still have a kind of ton of cap space left. We have seen them willing to part with a lot of money over the past couple of years. Now, some guys didn't take it, like Calvin Ridley, Brandon Ayuk. Other guys did, Milton Williams, Spillane, others. So the second-round pick part, the money part, like I believe that. I don't know if I believe they'd actually give up a first-round, unless it was something like special.
Yeah, I don't know what to believe with Elliot Wolf. And I'm going to say this also. Another answer that he gave in that was that, hey, when it comes down to disputes or spirited conversations, spirited debates between he and Mike Vrabel and Ryan Cowden, who makes the final call in those hypothetical deals? It was something I believe Nicole Yang from the Boston Globe asked in relation to reports that came out of the draft about spirited debates about who to go with in the draft. I still think it's Vrabel. Like, I still think that because of the track record that Elliot has had, that you have to give the edge to Vrabel because the Kraft seem to be completely in love with him. He's like a son of Foxborough. They brought him in basically as the savior after the Gerard Mayo experiment went so sideways. And when you listen to the players that are on the roster talk, it's so much, well, Vrabel this, Vrabel that. You listen to somebody like Vince Wilfork, who we're going to hear more from later in the show, sit down with Tommy Curran and say, Vrabel's going to be the difference. He's the difference in the culture here. Like, everything to me comes down to being Vrabel-centric. And maybe the Crafts have determined that they went too far in the opposite direction in a lot of ways with bringing Mayo in. And one of them was that breaking down silos and having this collaborative effort is just too messy for the NFL. Yes, you got to have your analytics team. You got to have your different levels of scouting and everything can't be one guy. But you have to have like a heliocentric approach with one guy. Like, somebody has to be steering the ship and have their hand in a little bit of everything. And that certainly seems to be more the Vrabel approach. And so if it was Vrabel standing up there and saying, right guy, you give me somebody who's going to have over 1,000 yards in receptions this year and help boost Drake and take us to the playoffs, yeah, I'll give up a first round pick for that. I'm just believing Vrabel more. You know, like I feel like because of the decisions, even the decisions with the free agents, their own free agents that they signed last year, Elliott Wolf was the one who he didn't have the title, but he gave Kyle Duggar the extension that's now paying him some $15 million this year. And he's playing into the fourth quarter of preseason games and they're trying to dangle him out there for trades, according to reports. And so I hear Elliott talk and I'm like, I don't know, man. It just doesn't hold the same weight for me as if I'm hearing that from somebody else. I think they should be on that level of trade, but I don't know that hearing it from him does it for me.
And that's the key question, right? Like if it comes down to it and there's a moment where Vrabel wants to give up a first-round pick for a player and Wolf doesn't, who wins, right? And it feels to me like...
Well, do you think wins?
I think it'll be Vrabel. And I think another piece of this is who did Vrabel bring with him who's going to be also a huge voice in the personnel department? Ryan Cowden. He spoke to the media the other day as well. And it just feels like the Crafts do believe in Elliott Wolf a lot, right? They kept him around after they fired Belichick and eventually promoted him. They kept him around after they fired Mayo. And the day after Mayo got fired, remember Crafts said in his press conference that Wolf's scouting system that they liked so much hadn't had a full year to be implemented at that point, and they were really excited about where it was going to take them. And that if you watched Forged in Foxborough, the draft episode, like Wolf was a strong voice in the room, but so was Vrabel, right? He was right there with him. So I think if it's college players in the draft, that might be more of a Wolf kind of centric thing. But obviously in a trade, pro players involved, I think that's more Vrabel. I think that's more Ryan Cowden. Not that Wolf's not involved, but I think if it came down to one or the other, Vrabel gets more of the input when it comes to pro players.
617-779-7937. If you want to chime in, if you believe that the Patriots are actually at a point in their rebuild where they would make a trade like this, they would trade a second round pick, they would trade a first round pick. If you think that they should or they shouldn't, they should continue focusing on those high level picks in the draft and not try to mortgage their future, because this is the other side of it. I know that there is an argument against this because of where they are in the rebuild. This is something that we talked about on TV the other night. Is this a team that is worth investing in? Like, if you're looking at, I'm not going to get into the names that are out there yet, but there's been a lot of movement just yesterday and teams, a flurry of kind of lower level trades. What does it take to be a team that is worth investing in? Like, you were 4 wins last year, you're 4 wins the year before, but now there's all this belief that Vrabel's going to get you to a floor of like 7 wins. That's what I believe. And that's, I think, kind of commonly what people think, that it's not going to be worse than that. So if you have somebody that you can trade for and you're giving up a second or first round pick and that bumps you up from 7 wins to 9 wins, is that worth giving up that much draft capital when you're really just, I think, in the second year of your rebuild?
And I think it comes down to the age of the guy you're getting. Like, Terry McLaurin's a guy that's out there. He turns 30 in like 3 weeks from now. Like, okay, that guy you could talk me into, especially if a first-round pick is not involved, but as we'll hear later in the show, some folks believe it'll take a first-round pick and more. But like a guy like Micah Parsons, who might be multiple first-round picks, like the Patriots aren't in a spot to do that. Even though he's younger and he's a top-five defensive player in baseball, in football, they're not in a position to do that. Like, the Patriots used to do that. Like, I think people are used to 2014, like, you sign you trade for an Aqib Talib, then you sign a Darrell Revis the next year, right? They're not at that point right now where it's like that one or two guys will push them from winning the division to winning a championship. Like, if you're trading first round picks just to go from, say, 8 wins to 9 or 10 to still just play in the wild card round, I don't think that is really worth it, especially given where kind of your young players are at, right? You have some promising young players. Keep some of the draft capital you have, especially those first round picks.
Yeah, I mean, here's my feeling with it. Like, I don't debate with anyone. I won't argue against anyone who says the key to all of this is going to come through the draft. And a big reason why you're in the position you're in is because of so many bad or, sure, at, you know, very best, lackluster drafts. I agree with that completely. But at the same time, if you have the opportunity, like Wiggy had a great lead on the morning show. He said, how often do you get guys in free agency? How often do guys of impact even make it to free agency at this point? It's increasingly rare. Even if you sit here in January and somebody looks like they're going to be an unrestricted free agent, boom, You know, once the tamper period opens, that guy's back with his team. We've seen it, especially with skills players, over and over and over again. It's just different now. And so I think that if somebody is available and you're able to trade for them, all this, without even getting into the cap space stuff, but all this idea of, well, are you really going to give up a second rounder for that? Are you? Look, I get it. Like, we all love Travion Henderson right now in preseason. We think he's going to be a great impact player. But let's not act like your second round picks over the last couple of years have been dynamite and that you can count on hitting on that going forward. Again, that's part of the reason that you're in the position that you're in. But at some point, to me, it's like, if you can get an impact player, get an impact player. If the impact player is 31, I don't really care if they're healthy. I don't really care if they fit what you do and they fit your culture and maybe improve your culture. And when you get into the level of the cap space stuff, this argument, like, I feel like people want it both ways. Like, people are like, well, you're going to have to pay Gonzalez next year. And Drake's bill is going to come due pretty soon because he's going to get a monster contract as a quarterback, assuming that things go well. And I'm like, at the same time, you hear Elliott Wolf on Monday. He's asked, why do you guys have so much room against the cap? Is that a sign that you are not confident or that your expectations for this team are not super high? And he's like, no, it's because we have a quarterback on a rookie contract. And it's like, okay, well, so then you can't spend eventually when that guy's getting paid? You know, like, when you have the rookie contract is the time to spend. So yeah, the draft capital to me is the bigger part. But I don't want to hear anything about, well, you can't give that guy $30 million. You can't give that guy $28 million. You have $60 million in cap space.
Yeah, and I think the cap space, like, I'm not one of those people that thinks the cap is totally irrelevant, but you can pay pretty much whoever you want to pay as long as you're at least reasonably smart about it. Look at the Eagles, all the high-priced good players they have. Look at how the Chiefs still can pay guys after Mahomes. And I know they had to trade Tyreek Hill. They still have paid a lot of other guys. Look at the 49ers, all those high-priced guys they have. They just paid Brock Purdy, too. So you can set aside money to pay for May and Gonzalez, because I think you will have to give them big extensions in the next few years, and still have money to pay other guys. And as I said, we've seen them, like, they offered Brandon Ayuk over $30 million a year and he said no. Calvin Ridley said no to them. DK Metcalf said no, that he didn't want to come here, right? So to me, it's not that they haven't tried with some of those guys. Those guys haven't wanted to come here. To your point, like Ronnie Stanley, who I think a lot of people wanted in the offseason to play left tackle, didn't even make it to free agency, right? So you either have to draft these guys or trade for them.
John,
right?
If Will Campbell turns out to be even a serviceable left tackle, like,
which, by the way, is what Ronnie Stanley is right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got paid a bunch of money.
You should pay him through the nose.
Yeah.
Like, I know that we've been on this journey with Will Campbell, ups and downs through his training camp, the arm length stuff, the idea of him trying to pick up these stunts quickly that the defenses are showing him at an NFL level, the play speed questions, all of that. But if 2 years from now, he's still playing left tackle for the majority of your games and healthy enough for that, you got to like pay through the nose for that, because the tackle has just been such a nightmare for them. But I think people focus more on these skill players because oftentimes they're the ones who are fighting for a bigger contract. Of course, we're dancing around the name Terry McLaurin, and we'll get to that and whether that's even a realistic thing or whether that's something they should pursue. But I think it's still worth questioning, what is the structure within the Patriots in terms of making these moves?
And I
who's picking up the phone? Who's pushing? Who's making the decisions? I just have a hard time sitting here and knowing, even just, for example, as I said before, the position that they're in with Kyle Duggar, that you think that it's Elliott doing all of that or the majority of that.
And I think Vrabel is the one of the two with more long-term security, right? Because if you go back last year, like, Drake May looks like was a great draft pick. The rest of that 2024, I mean, Jalen Polk and Javon Baker might not make the team. Caden Wallace has had a limited impact. Laydon Robinson's had no, I mean, outside of May, that 24 draft does not look good at all. So I think the guy with more long-term runway is Mike Vrabel, which might factor into some, because I think Vrabel, maybe because of that, might be a little more willing to be patient and say, no, let's not trade a first-round pick this year, or let's not trade a second-round pick, because I know I'm going to be here in 2027, whereas Wolf might think, wow, I had a not-so-good draft in 24. Looks like I had a pretty good draft in 25, but if I don't have a good one in 26 with my, you know, quote-unquote scouting system 2 full years in, then maybe I'll be looking to go somewhere else. And I also, too, wonder, and I mentioned his name before, but how Ryan Cowden fits into this. Because it feels very much like he's, if you go back to like the Belichick-Pioli relationship or the Belichick-Casario relationship after that, it feels like Cowden is Vrabel's kind of guy.
Well, I think it's interesting because with Vrabel, because he has so much of that, as I said, first of all, a little bit of the Belichick attitude and the defensive approach, but also because I do think that he has more power or is at least just like a bigger leader in different departments compared to what the Gerard Mayo structure was. I think because of that, everybody's like, okay, yeah, John Stryker is going to be Ernie Adams. And, you know, they're trying to assign all these different pieces. I just think it's notable and we should continue to talk about Cowden and Stretch came here with Vrabel. He implemented his own program. And that's what the direction the Crafts wanted to go in. And Elliott is one of the only holdovers from the last two iterations of that, which were both really unsuccessful. And I would ask you, because I think it's pretty clear to me, take Drake May out of it, because I think that was the most obvious pick in the world to me. You needed a quarterback, and he's sitting there. And it was, I think if Jaden Daniels had been in that position, they would have taken Jaden Daniels. I think they loved both those kids, and so they would have taken either one of them. What do you think is the most successful move that Wolf has had?
So outside of Drake May, I would argue it's probably going to be Travion Henderson, right? And we don't know that. We don't know that yet. And I love Carlton Davis, but as I said before, I feel like with the pro guys, that's as much a Vrabel thing as it is a Wolf thing, if not more. So like, I love the Carlton Davis signing, but is that more of Vrabel than a Wolf? That like, see, the draft, I know, is a Wolf thing primarily,
at least right now. The biggest win that he's had is the Matthew Judon trade.
Okay.
I think that's the best move.
Because
that
was
Elliott
the Jared Wilson pick ultimately, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, Atlanta, we don't know if Jared Wilson
is a third round pick,
is fighting for a starting spot, and he's hit a couple of speed bumps. But I think that's kind of the only, we'll see what
his biggest
Henderson
win might be surviving this long. I mean, seriously,
that's,
I mean,
true.
To
that
get
is
in,
a great
I
point.
Mean, Vrabel didn't stuff him in a locker after that last draft. He's still here.
I just think when you look at what he's done overall, like the only really big thing that you can point to is that Matthew Judon trade, which in the immediate aftermath, I was like, well, kind of bummed to see him go because he had a great season here in 2021, but it is what it is.
And I do think the Barmore extension was good. Like, I know he was hurt last year, but like, I liked keeping him around.
I'm TBD on that. Yeah. Like, I love Barmore. I hope that he can live up to his potential and what we saw at the end of 2023, but I do think Ted Johnson has a point of he had major health problems last year, and that's very serious. But his overall resume hasn't suggested, you know, that he is completely earned that contract. So we'll see. We're going to continue this talk on the other side because, as I said, there were a flurry of trades in the NFL yesterday that we're going to hit on, and there are still plenty of big name holdouts, guys who are flat out asking for trades, and the Patriots have allegedly been on the phone and even trying to move some of their guys. We see your phone calls as well. So we'll continue our NFL trade talk, monitoring what the Patriots are doing as we get closer to cutdown day.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all got to stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
I think the rebuild's more than just one guy. If one of those guys was like a really good lineman, I think that's where you would want to go. I mean, if you add any of those guys to your team, you're going to be a better football team, right?
His old friend Julian Edelman talking with Tom E. Curran about trades and where the Patriots are in their rebuild process right now, if it makes sense to go in on one of these big trade candidates. This portion of Jones and Keefe with the fill-ins of Mega and John Lyons is brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. So that's Julian Edelman's perspective. It's more than one guy. You're not going to have one guy come in and be the savior that you trade for and change everything in your program. I don't think anyone's expecting that. But could some of these guys who are potentially on the move make a big enough difference for your team that it makes sense to trade a second rounder, trade a first rounder, tack on some roster players, especially ones that you're not so interested on in making your 53-man roster that you got to cut down next week. We'll hit that in just a minute. But first, the number is 617-779-7937. If you want to join in on the conversation via the text line or our phones, let's go to Ryan in Boston. Ryan, you want to talk about the Patriots?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? Mecca, a long time. I hope Killington is doing well. Listen, I've been calling into this radio station since it seems like Christ was an altar boy, screaming they need offensive linemen. Guys like Micah Parsons, Trey Hendricks, Terry McLaurin, that's hunky-dory when you have an offensive lineman. You got to go – if you're talking about doling out picks for anybody to make this team better, it's got to be an offensive lineman. We've been seeing tackle. It's been 6 years. And now they drafted the guy with the shortest arms. I'm not going to sit here and I wanted Will Campbell, but the reports out of camp, I'm concerned. You're going to get that kid Drake May killed.
Thanks, Ryan. The Will Campbell reports, like,
I mean, you've actually been there every day. I was there 5-6 times. Like, I thought he's been, you've been there more than me, but I thought he's been fine when I've watched him.
I was not there in Minnesota when he was dealing with Grenard and getting run through at times. But as Keon White told me, best way to not get your face run through is experience getting your face run through over and over and over again. So that's what Will Campbell's doing right now. Like, with him, some of these growing pains, I think, is just baptism by fire. And I know we use that term a lot, but I even asked him, and I don't think he loved the question the other day. I was like, is there anything you can do in the classroom looking at film to get yourself up to speed? Like, because he was talking about the learning curve of going from college to NFL. And he was like, no, it only comes through experience. And I think he's talking about play speed. Like, you have to get up to that. You have to be able to get to the line of scrimmage and see immediately exactly what the defense is dressing up. Like, you can speak to this more from the college level to the NFL than I can, John Lyons. But I think for him, it's like, it's not even so much about, okay, the physical makeup, like the unusual kind of body type that he has as a lineman, but it's like more that he's a rookie, like throwing in these rookies. And I know that there's some guys who were drafted behind him that people are pointing to. Some of those guys are playing on the right side, and there's just, yeah, there's going to be less of a pressure cooker for them compared to where you're asking Will Campbell to play on the line.
Yeah, and like, I know the easy one people are going to point to is Josh Simmons in Kansas City, and I like Josh Simmons. I wanted the Patriots to draft
that's
him before,
also, though, like,
but he's playing with Mahomes with
and
Andy
Mahomes
Reid.
Mahomes is like, also like, I think, yeah, part of what people are excited about is that Mahomes is saying he's doing such a great job, and Mahomes didn't have a left tackle last year.
Right, Joe Tooney was playing left tackle in the Super Bowl. Love Joe Tooney, but he was playing left tackle in the Super Bowl. Yeah, look, I think, and Jonathan Grenard gets 3 sacks against him last week. Obviously, that's not good. And if I'm the Raiders, first thing I do is put Max Crosby against him in week 1 and see, you know, how it goes. But also, the other side of that is, if I'm the Patriots, do you really think Josh McDaniels and Mike Vrabel are going to leave Will Campbell on an island against Max Crosby a bunch in week 1? Like, Alex Van Pelt might have last year, and we saw that with Verdarian Lowe and Demontre Jacobs. I don't think Vrabel and McDaniels are going to do that. So I think, again, when I've been down there and I've seen Will Campbell, I think he's been fine. Not perfect, but I think he's been fine. And for a rookie, I think he's been solid. And I think he'll be a pretty good left tackle.
Tell people what that means, though. Because, like, here's the thing with Will, yeah, Campbell. And here's the thing with the offensive line talk, which is so boring,
I know you love
to
it,
most people. Yeah. No, I'm just, like, thinking of the audience. Like, they don't care so much about the big guys. And what they care about is Drake May going to get laid out 7 times a game because of this guy? And I understand that. But at the same point, like, Ramondre Stevenson talked about this the other day. It relates directly to what your running game can do, too. Like, your running backs are only as solid as your offensive line is going to be. So when people are saying, like, that Will Campbell does not look good certain days, what do you think is going on there?
So, first of all, run blocking, I think he's been fantastic. And,
well,
look,
oh,
as a,
yeah,
pass blocker, I think it comes down to some of it is, and I saw this in some of the early training camp practices, especially when he went against Chaisson, when guys go inside on him fast, inside speed, he has a little bit of trouble. And I think that might be an arm length thing where he tries to overcompensate and go too far outside. That's something he's going to have to work on. I think when guys have gone right at him, a lot of times he's held up really well, which is good. And when guys have gone to the outside, he's been okay. It's that inside speed, which, again, like you said, Stevenson talked about it with the running game. McDaniels and Vrabel aren't going to leave him on an island. Some of this comes down to, too, can Drake May get rid of the ball quick enough? Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen them do that in the past, and obviously when they were good, but they would, one of the ways to negate a good pass rush is they would get rid of the ball fast. But then part of that is, can your receivers get open fast? Like, I know DeMario Douglas can get open fast, and he can be there if Drake May needs to get rid of the ball quickly. I don't know if the other guys can do it. Like, Stephon Diggs has a history of doing it, but he is coming back from injury. Kayshon Booty doesn't have a history of doing it. Mac Hollins doesn't have a history. I'm not saying they can't do it, but we won't actually know that until September or October. So I know the easy target is to just point at Will Campbell, and there's things he needs to do better. But I think, to Edelman's point, it's going to be a collective effort here for them to improve how this offense runs.
And they've really left themselves with no other option, unless you think that Vidarian Lowe is going to step into that role.
And this goes back to, they've tried, like, they drafted Cole Strange in the first round and he wasn't good. They drafted Sidy Sow and he wasn't good. They drafted Atoni Omafi and he wasn't good. Last year, Caden Wallace and Laydon Robinson, that was two top picks in the top 150, I think it was, top 200. And neither one of them has made an impact. I mean, the last time, Mego, that I could think of that they drafted an offensive lineman who was actually good was Mike Onwenu, and they drafted him in 2020. Like, yeah, we're talking 5 years.
I think, look, other than that, it goes back to, like, Ted Karras.
Yeah, who, by the way, we all talk about letting Joe Tooney walk. How do you think this line would look if they just had Ted Karras?
I mean, like, that was 2016.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why, to me, it's been a multi-year failure on it. And again, I think Jared Wilson is going to be good. I think Will Campbell is going to be good. But, and you wrote about this a couple weeks ago for the website, it's two rookies you're depending on the left side of your offensive line, which is not ideal.
Let's go to Steve in Fall River. Wants to talk about Will Campbell. What's up, Steve?
Man, I just don't even know where to start. Here it is. Will Campbell is on the offensive line, which is, you don't just say, I'm taking Will Campbell at four, fold your hands and think you've solved your offensive line, because you have four other guys. So the draft capital that they spent on him, I don't care if he was Isaiah Wynn or Tony Vercelli, I still wouldn't have taken him, because he's not going to solve your entire unit problem. I hate to jump around, but did Ben Brown start at right tackle guard last week?
Ben Brown's
game?
Been
I thought I heard that.
Right guard is Mike Onwenu.
Yeah.
Okay, this guy
there.
Ben Brown came in. He's a nothing. He's got 8 or 9 starts at tackle at the center for you last year. Now apparently he's up in the upper echelon. The bottom line is, you can get linemen anywhere. Stephen Neal never played anywhere. The championship team is the Philadelphia Eagles. Their left tackle is rated number one by Pro Football Focus. Guess what round he was drafted in? Jordan Mulata, if I said it right. Well, let me answer it. 7th round. I'm not telling you you just bottom feed for your left tackle. That's not my point. The point is, at 4, you could have traded and gotten another pick in the draft. And you could have taken a tackle in the top 75. And he would have been just as flipping good, if not better, than this Will Campbell. And even if he was around the same, you're going to operationally, on the offensive line, you have to have 5 guys.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Yeah.
So
I
one
think,
quick point on that. The yeah. Eagles' other tackle, Lane Johnson, was drafted 4th overall.
Okay. Yeah, I think
look,
that...
Look, to Steve's point, I did a mock draft for EEI.com at the time. I was team trade down and take Josh Simmons later in the first round. And that doesn't mean I don't like Will Campbell and I don't think he's good. I just think the gap between him and a Josh Simmons, I don't think is that enormous. So he's going to be a good left tackle. I believe that. But when we watch the Patriots and the Chiefs, is the gap between him and a guy like Simmons going to be big? I don't think it is.
Yeah, I don't really care where they get a tackle. Like, if he's a serviceable tackle and it comes from being the 4th overall pick, I think, like a lot of people, I like to see skill players or, you know, yeah,
but
a
that's also everyone wants
there.
To help the offensive line until it's actually time to help the offensive line.
I don't care. Like, I don't, if you, okay. It's same, you could say the same thing, like that you can find skill players in the 6th round. You know, sometimes good players fall for different reasons. Sometimes they don't have the speed at the combine. And that's the that's a reason why, like, Efton Chisholm wasn't drafted. People sit here and say, well, if Efton Chisholm is actually going to be Amendola, like, why wasn't he drafted? Because his 40 time sucked. Simple as that. Some guys don't have test speed. Like, some guys maybe don't have flat out speed, and they're good football players. Like, the draft isn't perfect. We have sat here long enough and watched it to know that. But I want to get back to something that is perfect, which is the trade market. You can never go wrong with one of these trades, right? Because we had a flurry of trades yesterday. These are a little bit lower level ones. From Adam Schefter yesterday, the Chiefs traded wide receiver Sky Moore in a 7th round pick to the Niners for a 6th round pick. Broncos traded Devon Valey, wide receiver who I don't even know, and a 7th round pick to the Saints for a 4th round pick. Vikings traded defensive tackle Harrison Phillips and a 7th round draft pick to the Jets for 2 6th round draft picks. The Browns traded defensive tackle Juwan Briggs and a 7th round pick to the Jets for a 6th round pick. So none of those are any of the super high level names that we've been talking about. Of course, Trey Hendrickson, since before Easter, people have been talking about whether he'd get a new deal with the Bengals, and now I don't even know where he is. I don't think he's in the state of Ohio. Terry McLaurin has been in this weirdo contract lock with the Commanders, was activated off the physically unable to perform list. And then Micah Parsons, Jerry Jones just seems to believe is going to play no matter what, but he doesn't want to be there and is actively like pretty unhappy. Do you think that any of those three guys are realistic whatsoever to think that they're going to come to the Patriots at this point in the summer?
So Parsons, no. The only one I think is that's actually realistic is maybe McLaurin. Like, and again, I look at the Patriots. Do they really want to invest a first or second round pick trading for, say, Trey Hendrickson? When he'd be better than any of your edge players, but is he so much better than, say, Keon White and Harold Landry that all of a sudden you're going to win 3 or 4 more games? Like, Parsons is that much better than them, but you'd be giving up. I mean, Khalil Mack got traded for 2 firsts, a 4th, all this other stuff, which I just don't think is worth it for where the Patriots are at. So then it's McLaurin. He's the only one of those three that I'm like, maybe I could see it happening, but if I'm Washington, why would I trade that guy? Like,
but
that's,
why have you also gotten like, to this point with him?
I know, and
what
I think
I don't understand.
And it's weird too, because we're talking about a Washington team that traded for Deebo Samuel, traded for Laremy Tunsil, just went to the NFC Championship game. Why wouldn't you pay the second best offensive player on your team behind Jaden Daniels?
And
like, I don't.
It
get
got
that.
To the point where I was kind of wondering, what does it say about the makeup of the team right now that Jaden Daniels hadn't said anything to anything about Terry McLaurin? And then finally he says around the preseason game that they just had, like, oh yeah, Terry's gonna come through, whatever, like it's gonna come through, I'm not worried about it. And it's, you kind of feel like finally Jaden is saying something, even though he's just about to be a second year quarterback. I think that McLaurin is the clearest fit. If you got to give up, if you got to pay him like, you know, $30 million,
That's more than worth it.
Fine with that.
Like,
you
DK
have $60 million in cap space.
For a second.
Like, you're gonna roll. How much is he gonna roll over into next year so that you can pay Carlton Davis, who's barely a participant in camp, and Milton Williams? Like, those are other guys who are gonna be eating up your cap space that might not even be on the team, like Kyle Duggar or Kendrick Bourne. Like, to me the money side of it is not a question, but what you're willing to give up in terms of draft capital and how you can move other guys on your team right now is a bigger part of it. We're going to hit that on the other side, because there is a Patriots and NFL insider who spelled out what he thinks it will take to get Terry McLaurin in a Patriots uniform. And it might be a little bit too rich, the draft capital price, for me, John Lyons, right after this break.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all got to stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
I think if you're at Washington and you get to the point where you say, this is not going to work from a monetary standpoint, then I think Washington could consider something like that. If you include a first round pick and you're moving Stephon Diggs with it, and trading for Stephon Diggs gives them a contractual flexibility that they wouldn't have if they were guaranteeing Terry McLaurin's deal, maybe they would think about it. And to, like, and you know, the difference between Terry McLaurin and Micah Parsons is Terry McLaurin is exactly the type of personality you want to put in your locker room. He's exactly the kind of guy you pay. He's the kind of guy like where when you give him the money, you can point to him and say, see, guys, that's what we reward. That's the guy over there that we reward. So Terry McLaurin would make all kinds of sense to me. I know it's something they've inquired on. So, like, I would see that as something I would do, and I think Washington will want somebody who could help them right now based on their actions to this point. Maybe Diggs and a premium pick for McLaurin gets Washington to think about it.
That was Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated on Boston Sports Tonight from NBC Sports Boston last night, discussing what he thinks Washington would listen to on Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin still stuck in this weird contract lockout, I don't know what you want to call it, with a, what would you...
It's a bizarre situation.
It's not really like a holdout because he's off the pup list, but it's kind of strange.
That's invested so much.
Overall.
They won't pay the guy that was there.
So would you give up Stephon Diggs plus a first round draft pick for Terry McLaurin this season?
No. And look, it's not so much the Diggs thing. It's more the first round pick because I sat here yesterday and I said the Patriots, I think, can win 9 games. So that's the 15th or 16th pick plus a player to get McLaurin. And I like McLaurin a lot. He's very good. I mean, DK Metcalf went for a 2nd and a 7th, and he's a better player than Terry McLaurin. And they had to pay DK Metcalf a big contract on top of it. So you'd be paying McLaurin, bringing him in. Like, you'd be paying more money and more draft capital and more player capital for McLaurin than the Steelers paid for Metcalf, who is not only a better player, and I know it's close, but a better player. He's also 3 years younger than McLaurin. So a first and Diggs, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I would say like the actual cash side of it and what you would spend against your cap to keep him here, because even once you trade for him, then you got to give him some semblance of the contract that he's trying to get with Washington right now. So you're paying like $30 million. I saw a report that he wants as much as $33 million. AEV, which
that doesn't, honestly, that part of it doesn't really bother me
I'm kind of there with you. Like, 33 is pretty rich for a guy on the other side of 30, but at the same time, I don't care.
Like, and they just offered Ayuk 30 last year.
Yeah.
And he's a much better player than Ayuk. And Ayuk's coming off an injury.
There is something to McLaurin being a super high character guy. Like, it's hard to find those guys who are also extremely productive on the field, a Boy Scout off the field, and going to be, like, the, you know, exactly up on a pedestal, what you want your young team to look like, and then on the field being as productive as he is. First round pick, I've argued with other people about this. I think it's too much. I think it's too high. That's where I draw the line, especially when you cite what other guys are going for. To me, I feel like that's Adam Peters just being kind of a jerk. I think that's him being like...
I think that's a starting price.
Yeah, I think that maybe it's a negotiating standpoint for him, but to me, I'm like, so who actually has the leverage in that situation? Like, because Terry is a good guy, is it going to get to a point where he settles for a T. Higgins deal there? Because he's like, I've pushed this as far as it's going to go, and this is at least respectable? Or are they going to actually get to a point where the leverage shifts and somebody like the Patriots can make an offer that's not a first round pick? And are you just waiting that out to see? Or do you actually go and strike now if you think Terry McLaurin is worth a first round pick?
And how long is this going to go, right? Because we are, what, 2.5 weeks or whatever it is from opening day? Like, once you get to like a week or week and a half from now, I'm not saying they wouldn't do the deal, but it just makes it harder and harder the closer you get to opening day for some team to want to trade for him, pay him, have him learn a new offense on the fly.
If you're Efton Chisholm, you're like, don't come here, don't come
please,
here.
Yeah, please,
come
definitely
here.
No. Yeah. And that's the other thing. This Patriots receiver group, like, it's a lot better than it was last year.
Do you think so?
I do.
This is another thing I've argued with people about.
But better doesn't mean they're going to be great.
No.
Like, they were awful
last year. I think that they're better this year, even just from the coaching standpoint. Like, I think Todd Downing, at least from what we've seen very early, has them at least running routes correctly.
Lining up right.
Yeah. Hey, some of that is on the player. Like, some of that is fundamentally on players. But the spacing last year with your pass catchers was so atrocious and so stupid looking half the time that, like, I believe just even the structure of the program is going to improve them somewhat. And I do think Diggs, like, people are very low on him because he has been lost in the offense over the last couple weeks with the return of Mac Hollins. And you kind of go, is Diggs going to play, you know, in the slot at times? What is he going to be? What is his role? I think that's still being figured out. But I still think Stephon Diggs is like an 800 to 850 yard guy. Like, he's still capable of that.
Yeah, like if you have Diggs, Douglas, and then Kayshon Booty, at least that's a representative competent receiver group.
It's a professional room.
I know it's a low bar, but I mean, you talked about the spacing and all that last year. I mean, look, DeMario Douglas had a pretty good year last year. Kayshon Booty had a couple good moments, the catch against the Texans, the catch against the Bills for the touchdown. Other than that, their receiver group did nothing last year. Like, arguably the worst, them and Carolina were the worst two receiver groups in the league. So, like, if you had a guy like, that's another, like, you brought up Chisholm, like, looking at your receiver group should not preclude you from adding anyone else.
This is true.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
much as I love Efton, this is true.
And it's not just him. It can be Mac Hollins. It can be Booty. It can be anyone. Like, McLaurin's better than all those guys. He's better than most of them put together. And so are a lot of other guys out there as well. So your group is better. So that's been better to talk about this year. But it's still, and maybe it goes back to the Edelman point we played earlier. It's just when you look at this receiver group, you look at this offensive line, it's going to take two off seasons to really fully fit. You know, one off season, you get the Will Campbell and you get a step forward from Kayshon Booty and you get Diggs. And the next off season, you get another lineman and a really good front line receiver. Like, it just might be a 2 year thing.
Let's grab a call here. Let's go to John in the truck. What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, guys? Meg, I'm a big fan. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I think Alvin Freer is crazy about his trade proposal, but I know everyone's talking about maybe possibly getting McLaurin and Hendrickson. With the cap space, why not get both? Why not trade your second round and your first round next year to get those two players to get out the cap space? And the level of impact that they would have on both sides of the ball will completely transform this team. I mean, you basically, if they stay healthy, you can write your ticket to the playoffs already. I'll let you guys talk about that and just let me know what you guys think about that.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Hey, getting one is a home run.
There
is a reality of the situation, because I wrote about this for this morning on EEI about, like, why not go for these trades now and examining the arguments against the trades now. How much does this improve maybe a mediocre team? And is it worth giving up future draft capital when you need to really build through the draft, like that whole argument? But getting two of those guys, I mean, if you do look at the cap situation next year, you're like $15 million over the cap with guys like Milton Williams and Carlton Davis and et cetera. Then you got to pay Gonzo. Like, there are some real life implications of going out and getting somebody like that, but you can work with it and it shouldn't stop you from getting one guy.
And I think, like, Trey Hendrickson to me, 30 years old, 17 and a half sacks last year, really, really good player, great player. That's the guy I think you add when you think you're close to winning a Super Bowl. Like, if the Bills trade for him or the Eagles trade for him or Cincinnati really should just keep him. But if one of those teams, like if the Rams trade for him, that's the guy I think when you're like, hey, this is the piece that will put us over the top. Like, we already have a good defense. We already have a good pass rush. This guy in his 17 and a half sacks will put us over the top. Whereas I don't know if I see that for the Patriots.
All right. Well, we will continue our Patriots talk on the other side because we do have a preseason game tonight. And so we are going to be looking at
who's actually playing in this. Aren't you so excited? Preseason game.
Somebody traveled for this game that I think is a little bit of a surprise that he traveled. And we're going to find out what that means. So we're going to discuss what that means, that this one player traveled, and who else is going to be getting their last-minute action in this preseason game against the Giants right after this break.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all got to stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.